Black Hills, what I've always been taught is our Garden of Eden, where we came from.
You know, we believe that we emerged from Wind Cave in the Black Hills, from under the earth. It's part of our creation story.
We know exactly where that hole we came out of. Miles of caves down there, Wind Cave. And they're all connected, they all breathe. That's our mother still breathing.
We have tonight one of the strangest stories to come along in a long time. A group of American Indians has taken over the town of Wounded Knee in South Dakota, and they have been holding it for nearly a whole day.
It's been more than a week now since the Indians took over Wounded Knee. They still say they're not going to give it up until their demands are met. It doesn't look like that's going to happen now, and the Justice Department has given them an ultimatum.
The way that the Lakota mind works, there's really no separating out the historical from the contemporary and the ancestral from today, and saying, okay, this is just a land issue, because it's more than a land issue. You know, it's our spiritual destiny to do this. And we have a right to our destiny, and it really makes us mad when somebody outside our Lakota way says, you don't have that right.
What's going on here?
We are living on what they want to further enrich themselves, what the fat taker calls resources, gold, silver, uranium, water. So that means they can do what they have to do to push us over to this little piece of dirt and freeing up their access to these resources, whatever they might be.
Yeah, I am a land defender and a sacred water protector, you know, and my ancestors were, and so my obligation is to only follow their path.
We talk about spiritual obligation and spiritual privilege, you know, to just have the full belief in my whole body and my whole being and my spirituality that this is my continent. My ancestors came from this continent. So can't nobody tell me while I'm on my continent what's going down.
American Indian movement leaders said the purpose of the takeover was to dramatize injustices to Indian people throughout the United States and to bring attention to poor living conditions on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
To prove our rights in the olden days, we were billy club, drug behind the United States Marshal card, you know, shot, to prove our point that we are human beings. To me, demonstration's full of bunk. My brother in Albuquerque, I will not name him because he's not here in the world, but I was up in the hotel room, we come up, all right, bro, let's go. Well, go where? We're going to demonstrate. Demonstrate? I said, you know I'm Oglala. I said, I don't demonstrate. I'll kick ass and take names later. Who in the hell wants to demonstrate? And that belongs to the white people. That doesn't belong to Lakota people. Oh, shit, no.
The standoff continues at Wounded Knee, South Dakota. 200 Indians still occupy that small community, and federal marshals still surround them.
Well, the United States has been living with dishonor. I call them dirty, lying, murdering bastards. That's what I call America. And they have no conscience because capitalism, they work hard to see how much money they could make. And it's I, me. With the Lakota people, it's we, us. The whole kinship has to be involved. We were here before they came. They have to recognize that. But they won't do it. So I stood up and I told America, yeah, you're murdering, thieving, lying killers. That makes a good capitalist. We become consumers, and now we're kind of in jail, in prison, with the colonized capitalist system in America. We're quasi-sovereign status because the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs supervises us. We're wards, we're childlike, we're cool, we're dumb, so we can't manage our own affairs, so the United States has to manage our affairs for us. And they've been doing a shitty job.
You know, we're Ogallalas. You know, they, for some reason, they're always wanting to punish us the worst. But like I said, we're the nation who beat them in battle. There's never been any other nation to beat them in battle. You know, so of course, they wanted to see the Ogallala dead and gone. But here we are today. You know, there's no way they can get rid of the fiercest warrior tribe of this continent. It's our continent. So when they say we're dying off, we're extinct, to me, that's BS. You know, we're flourishing, we're growing. But see, it's the outside society, the fat taker mentality wants the world to believe that we're a myth. One day they hope to say, oh, the myth of the Indian. You know, they probably already do say that. But for us, we say the age of the drunken, bent-over Indian is over. Watch out. Join or get the hell out of the way.
We have declared Wounded Knee an independent country.
The ancient people have been oppressed the same way we have. No difference. And so we share the same story with all the Palestine, the Arab countries around the world. But what we see is people in Israel are treating the PLO or the Palestine the same way America treats us. So we can't side with them when they're committing genocide, acts of genocide over there. We feel bad about that, but that's just a fact. So our fight for land is the same.
I personally have always believed that the people over there are called upon to stand up in the same manner for the same reasons. It goes beyond a solidarity in terms of how it's used in the English language. It's more like a spiritual connection that our peoples have. So our history as people is very similar in terms of colonialism and occupation, and then they try to expel us from our lands and basically separate us out as less than. We have less human rights.
As a kid, I always heard the stories from my mother because, like I mentioned before, she went to Lebanon. I think it was really important for my mom's mentality. It was good for her because whatever she saw there, she brought it back. And I think it was the fighting warrior spirit of those people. How she explained it, how she talked about it, how it was just, they don't give a shit, they're not scared. The armed struggle of Lebanon at that time, for me, it's like unthinkable. That would be like me standing at the res line using a bazooka to blow up the first bar. Here we can't imagine that. You know, our generation don't know it. Our parents' generation with the Wounded Knee, they know it. But our generation, we've never experienced it. But it won't be too long before that happens. I know it won't, because if the water war begins, lives will start being taken. For us as young Tokalas, we don't want to be stuck in the waiting process, waiting for a handout, waiting for something to go our way, waiting. That's what Fat Taker did, was he trained us to wait, trained us to stand in line, trained us to just be the drunken Indian, but not anymore. I grew up hearing my mom say, fuck the feds, don't you ever trust one, don't you ever talk to one. You know, I heard that over and over. fuck the feds, because I do it from my heart and I do it for my nation and I do it with no fear. No fear that anyone can shame me. Nobody can. You know, I'm a Lakota with roots so deep in this earth, they go to creation. And there's warrior flags here, and you'll see all throughout the whole encampment there's warrior flags. And a lot of these flags that are flying, they represent that. When they fly those, they fly them with pride, like, this is who we are as Native people. And there's nothing, like, the DNA, our DNA is in the dirt and the grass and, like, the salmon and buffalo. It's all in us. Like, that's how we are connected. Like this, we say this is the blood and bones of our ancestors. When we walk on this, you know, we respect this earth, but it connects us and it ties us, like our sister Aloha says, like our roots go so deep, they go to creation.
This is a, you know, a fight for, you know, our first medicine, water, you know, and, you know, for our future generations.
You know, 7 generations ago, our ancestors thought of us today, and now it's our responsibility to think of the next 7 generations, because without this water, we cannot be Lakota. We can't do any of our ceremonies without this water. And that's how powerful this water is. It was our first medicine to our people.
This is actual truth. When we say water is life, water is sacred because it is our life-giving source.
I just don't want to leave, you know. I have to fight. I cannot sit back behind a computer and watch all this happen. It's because I said I come from a warrior family. My dad was a warrior. My mom was a warrior. My ancestors were warrior. And so I have to stand up.
Lived on the streets for part of my life in Toronto and grew up on the reserve, so I feel like I'm an able-bodied person to be here. So however I can put work in, you know, whether it be getting arrested or cooking or cleaning up or just, you know, talking to people, connecting with people, and then just sending info back to our res, you know, that's pretty much my role here. I didn't come here on any funding or nothing. I basically came here with a couple $100 in my pocket, but you know, it ain't about money, and we've survived a lot longer, like, without money, so I know I'm good here.
You know, I started seeing it on Facebook, you know, I can't just stand around, you know, and cause this is my res, you know, this is for my people, so I started looking out for it, and my boss said no, and so I just up and left. I left everything behind. I quit my job. I left my home. You know, I knew I had family here, so bought everything that I had and just came north and just moved back.
How long are you guys gonna stay out here, you think?
I don't know.
That's how we win.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. So then, yeah. You just open them. Drop them in there.
Just talk security. When you lived in an old community where there was teepees, you know, you had to conduct yourself differently than you would in a square house where you could go inside and holler at your wife and kids and do things that ain't appropriate. Whereas you live in a community like this with other people, you don't want to be, everyone hears what you're doing. Yeah, living in a community like where we're at here in Cannonball is a beautiful thing because we're learning how to be relatives again. We're learning how to remember the old ways of living and having respect and honor and in your everyday life.
Everybody that comes here to the camp should come with skills, whatever skills that they have, that could contribute to the greater betterment of this camp. Also, as Native people, we have to go and actually put something forth for their nation. Like, when I went, they asked me what I said. I know how to, you know, help with childbirth. I know about herbs and medicines. I know how to smoke our own meat and smoke our own salmon. And they said, okay, well, we just got a fresh moose and we just built a smoker, so can you teach the people that don't know how this? And so it's about passing on the skills, and that each of us have a skill or a teaching that we could pass on, and then we just become stronger and mightier nations and allied tribes together.
I think that's one thing that's so unique about this camp is we have so many nations here standing together that we have a chance to maybe make the government listen to us. And we also understand that even though we stopped this pipeline, there's many more pipelines trying to come, and it's going to be an ongoing battle. It's going to be an ongoing struggle that our people are going to have to continue to be a part of.
We've never seen anything as big as this, and this is because people want to protect water. This is because people are feeling it in their spirit to come and travel miles and thousands of miles to come here. Like walking around the encampment and meeting all the people, they're all like-minded people. They have a history of resistance. They're not just coming here, you know, with no insight in why we're here. They're coming here very articulate, very educated on the reasons why we're here. And I'm hearing it over and over again that our people have had enough.
Nation, you know, this is what I grew up knowing. It was more or less horses all my life, and it just kind of inspires me being around, you know, different people that want to learn about horses, and I just try to teach them the little bit that I know and as what I've been taught along the way. And this medicine bag kind of just means, you know, the horses are medicine, you know, they're our medicine. They're the ones that take our hurt, you know, and that makes people feel alive again. Whenever they sit on the horse, they say they feel whole. And there's even a couple of girls that I let them around just out here, and I heard them crying, and I was like, and I turned around and I asked them, what are you crying for? And they're like, it's just, you know, I never got to ride a horse in my whole life, and it's the best feeling that I've ever had throughout my whole life.
Why would you put the pipeline under the Missouri River, the second largest watershed in the nation? That will really hurt the poor people, because we can't buy water. We can't truck in water from where they get it and what they do. So we just have to leave. And once we leave our land, that opens to there, taking the uranium and the forestry and the oil and everything, because they can use the poisonous water for all of those industries.
What kind of life do I want for my children? Do I just want to be rich for one generation and not worry if my children have clean water? The same water that was here 10,000, 20,000 years ago is still here. The same fresh water is still here. And once we poison that, it don't matter how much money we have or what.
Coming from Sagatmuk territory, we've been battling with one of the world's largest mine tailings disaster, Imperial Metals, Mount Pauley Mine. It dumped, you know, hundreds of millions of gallons of toxic mining waste and heavy metals right into our pristine water, including the deepest glacier-fed lake in the world. So we know all too well government and corporations' impacts on our land. They're there to make money off of our resources and our land, while Indigenous people become even more impoverished because they're not only stripping the natural resources from us, but they're also contaminating our salmon, and our salmon is the lifeblood of our people. And so when we talk about fighting these pipelines, we're also talking about self-determination, and we're talking about our own people starting to make decisions on our lands, our laws, our spiritual laws, our natural laws. They do exist.
And that's just, I think, part of being, you know, part of the First Nations people. You know, you're automatically born into that struggle where the federal government owns you, you know, or thinks they own you. They own your territories.
Some one of the issues that we want to continue to address back up home is that we could be fighting these corporations all day, all night, 365 days a year. We could be fighting with the government. It's the government that's continuing to issue the permits.
You know, the UN put a statement out in favor of us, but the United States could, they don't care about the UN. The UN's just like Indians to them. Say whatever you want. You know, they don't care. UN can support us all they want as a nation to nation, but United States just laughs at the UN. To me, why go to the UN when the United States could care less? We need America to look at us as a individual nation and live up to their word that their forefathers said. They have no honor. They have no honor whatsoever.
They make treaties and laws and they never hold up to them. So this is bigger than the pipeline. This has been going on for forever, since her ancestors, since his ancestors, since every, you know, and this is what they've been fighting.
We need to know our war history and how our people have stood up and resisted since the very beginning, because we don't even hear that. And we need things to our more modern-day war history, like Oka, Gustafson Lake, you know, Wounded Knee. Like, that's what gives this generation the inspiration.
My father was in Wounded Knee, and he fought against the government with arms, in an armed struggle. And to us, that was a war. You talk about Sitting Bull, who was the chief that was murdered up here. You talk about Crazy Horse that was murdered at Fort Laramie. These are relatives of ours. These are grandparents of our relatives. So it's not like history to us.
What to keep our numbers up in this camp, you know, and we know that this camp was created, you know, through prayers, but we also know that, you know, with our prayers, we have to stop them with our bodies. You know, where I'm willing to do anything, you know, I'm willing to lock down, I'm willing to do whatever. I love my Takojas, my grandchildren, I love my, you know, Takojas that are coming.
It's the relationships that we build that are the political ties to continue our battle. Like-minded people, warriors, you know, we have a responsibility. It goes deep into our blood and our soul and our spirit. You know, we come from a warrior lineage. We never stop fighting.
I knew I had to be here. It was just like that pull. And that's what we even call it. When you talk to people, we're calling it the pull, because something in you makes you have to be here. There's people that have like hitchhiked here on their last month's rent money. But they don't care because they have to be here.
They came in from Nebraska, are pretty excited about all of you guys with the horses. They know you're heroes.
Whether they're from Canada or America or any of these other countries, the police are going to come down at our people with such excessive force and, as I say, chase us back to the reserve. And that's what they're saying. South of the Cannonball River is a free speech zone. They want to chase the Indians back to the reservation, which are concentration camps in our eyes. And this camp is freedom for our people. The first time our people have ever been able to step out of that reservation boundaries and say, this is our land.
They usually just go, move, move, move. And that's how they also control the pace. On three, we're going to move. We're going to try this. We're going to go as far as the ladder, okay? Three. Move, 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 move. All right.
To be able to live in a community, to be able to live in close spaces with your comrades and with your family, to be able to, how are we going to communicate? How is there conflict resolution and consensus decision making? Everything that's the basis on how we're going to run our traditional governance. All of this we're learning here. It's decolonization.
The whole thing was, it started out as a revolution and ended up turning into a massacre.
So it's like a weak spot for the
wood? Yeah, it's a weak spot for the wood. So, or like if you see it like this already, want to cut, either want to put it right here, just so like you could just cut it right here, bam. Look, no.
No, that one.
Wait, that's a tiny one.
Yeah.
Hey, stand back.
That's
stand
an
back.
Even tinier one.
What? That.
He's better than you.
I'm better than him.
Yeah, I'm better than you.
Colonization is an act of war here, and it has not stopped. And this is just a continuation. This fight is just a continuation of us resisting since the beginning. And people need to understand that that's what it's about. Because people are in here with their lives, their whole existence as Indigenous people is to stand up and defend our land. There's direct action trainings going on here on a daily basis all day long. There's people getting prepared. Like, our minds are prepared. Like, I always say, like, the crazies have arrived, because who else in this world is going to come to extreme temperatures in North Dakota to fight a pipeline? Like, it's us. Because as soon as there's the call for action, there's always hundreds of people that act on that call like this. They're ready like this. You know, they have their goggles, they have their everything, they have their balaclavas, they have everything that they need to go to the front lines, to document, to be there, to hold that space, to show the world, you know, that we are resisting and we're not going anywhere. And people are willing to act on a moment's notice here in the encampment, and I've seen it with my own eyes. I believe that in our territory, we're dealing with the Trans Mountain Kinder Morgan pipeline. We've had some Department of Indian Affairs chiefs and council already sign on to this pipeline. So I think what we have to really look at is how we are going to start developing our traditional ways of governing ourselves outside of the Department of Indian Affairs in Canada, outside of the Bureau of Indian Affairs here in the U.S. And this is where we have to start elevating ourselves as, how are we going to make decisions? Because there's going to be another pipeline here, and another mine here, and another this there. And as Indigenous people, we have to start collectively organizing on mass scales like this to be able to address these big issues. And this is our like infancy stage right here. But we have to realize that this is an energy in an era right now with the newly elected Trump, that this era and this energy is going to shift, and I think a lot of people are going to have to awaken to the realities here, not just Indigenous people, but all oppressed people and all oppressed communities. And this is a prime time for us to start organizing together.
I didn't expect to be here, you know. I expected to have to see it from over there, from where I was in New York. And then when the time came, I was having dreams about it, and I had many, many things that was roving in my brain of what to do, you know. But they brought me here. It brought me here, and I have many affirmations about that. And I know it's a direct call of my bloodlines coming, asking me to be here.
So myself, anything and everything I have is expendable. The only thing that is not expendable to me while I'm here is my 10-year-old daughter, which is the very reason why I'm here. Because I want her womb to be clean and healthy, and I want her to be able to have healthy children. So regardless of the conditions, regardless of their so-called eviction notice, you know, we're still going to do what we can to save water. So if they come in and try to remove the Oyate from this land, they only incite a riot themselves.
The word for dirt, I always tell people what the word for dirt is in Lakota we say ma-kha. And ma means your sense of being you. And kha means used to be.
This dirt, we all turn to this. This is why all this substance is here. Dirt just didn't happen.
Oh, wow.
Millions and millions of years of dinosaurs dying, animals dying, us guys dying. That's where all this dirt comes from. You might be sitting on the forehead of one of your ancestors 1,000, 2,000 generations ago. You don't know. You have to walk reverently on the earth because of that. That's why it's sacred. It took me 3 years to interpret the word for woman. And in Lakota, we call woman Wiya. Wiya. Say it. Wiya.
Wiya.
Wiya. Wiya.
Wiya.
Yeah. And what Wiya means is the motion of the world. That's what it describes. Woman is the motion of the world. And us men are Wichasha. And Wicha is the stars that we see. And Sha is red whenever it comes down here to earth. So us men, we're what we call ourselves is a gift star to the motion of the world. And with that chemistry, that's how us men came to be here. So this world belongs to the women, you know. Us men, we just guessed. And as long as the motion is in the world, women will never become extinct.
Daddy, all life changed. I just said...
Each word has an origin story. Water is life's called Mine. And in our spirituality, we don't pray to one God. We have seven spirits that were the origin of this whole world. And Wheels, the sun, he was the most strongest. He sat in the middle, and beside him sat Wopre. Wopre is the female, and Wopre means law. And then next to him was Takushkashka, all emotion. And on the left side was Mokhpiatko, the blue sky, and contrary, and the trickster. Those are the seven spirits. And here one day, the sun, left someplace, so he wasn't there, so the woman, Wopke, was sitting with the blue sky. The blue sky was the most powerful bully, so he was kind of a bully spirit. And so she said, hey, Mahbiatho, you're so strong. And she pointed down here to this earth, and she said, sure, sir, some of your blood on this little piece of land here, see what happens, you know. And naturally, us men, we're still like that. We never change. Ah, ha, ha, ha. And trying to show off, he cut himself in a way where his spirit drained out from him. So instead of he's everywhere, he's the biggest spirit because he's everywhere, but he became a weak spirit after that. And his blood came here on this earth, and that's the water that we drink. That's the blood of Mokhbiatko, or the blood of the blue sky. So that's what water represents to us. It's a spirit, sacred spirit. And most of our words have a story behind how that formed. So when you say that word, it's at the appropriate time and circumstances. Kids know all the names of the grasses, the trees, the animals. In the white man's education system and language, it's like a little tube. Put it on, and this is what they teach you. And they forget about this whole huge purpose to be alive, and so people live that way, and I think they call it Christian capitalism. I'm not sure though.
Ready? I'm gonna do some magic.
Louis,
ready?
Hadouken! That was tight.
Yeah, that was tight. Ooh, I was wanting to tell a story.
You?
It's like hatred.
What do you think of you? Go ahead.
That's a good line. Yeah.
It's all the way back to you, though.
Yeah.
It was still raining. The people in the street, they were driving. The fire tried to drum. It got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, there was a little.
So just seek spirituality, it's so easy. One of the things I'll ask the question is, sometimes when you go out in the dark, you get that feeling on your neck, just like somebody's watching you and something's going to come out and grab you. Do you guys ever get that feeling?
Yeah.
There's 5 senses. And not one of those senses is fear. You create your own fear. And it's so simple, because during the day you could see 100%. But at night like this, you could probably only see 2%. So those are your eyes trying to see that causes that feeling. But if you don't believe me, there's another way to get rid of it. You know how that is? You have to outrun it. Well, fear, you create your own fear. It's not a part of your senses. So you gotta have a broad mind so you don't have to have no fear.
We all came directly from our ceremonies. We came from our sundance, you know, we came from our, you know, our humblechas, anything that we're doing as far as a sacrifice that we do in our own traditions, we do it for the land, for the water, for the children, you know, for the future generations. That's the traditional belief that we have. That's only natural for us to do that.
When you wake up and you start resisting this oppression, this dominance, and you're realizing that your self-assertion into your identity is it's a spiritual path. And once when you realize past your own boundaries, your own physical, spiritual boundaries, that there's something more out there. There's more out there that we need to protect.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Grazie. Ci sono domande?